It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network.
You're listening to a weekly podcast made by Miami Dolphin fans for Miami Dolphin fans. Your source for entertaining Dolphin news, insight, and general conversation. Here's your host, Michael Fink.
And it's another Fin Fans podcast. Today I'm here with the Ragonis. How are you guys? Chris, how are you?
Doing good, Mike. Way better now that Buffalo's out of the playoff race.
Uh-huh. How about you, Lewis?
Yeah, I'm liking Buffalo being out of there. I was a happy camper, you know, to see all those Buffalo fans walking out of the stadium miserable, throwing snowballs at Mahomes when he was trying to give out his gloves to some kids on the sideline. I mean, what kind of ridiculous nonsense. I mean, listen, how do they get away with throwing snowballs at the players on the sideline? I mean, it was happening. They were going back and forth with them. And you see snowballs getting thrown through the end zone every time you see a receiver trying to catch a ball, too. Have you guys noticed that in some of these games?
Well, last year it was us they were throwing
ice. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I don't understand how they don't have security, you know, monitoring stuff like that. Because I know when you go down to the Dolphins, the Dolphin football games, you can't even throw a peanut. You know,
I've seen you throw peanuts. Up.
Yeah, but, you know, they harassed me the whole damn game, Mike, over a damn peanut shell. I mean, come on, you know? And they're throwing ice balls, snowballs, you know. But it was great to watch Kansas City go in there and knock them out again. You know, it's great to see because that's the last team I want to see go to the Super Bowl.
I don't think either of those teams are what they were last year.
Not at all. Not at all. You know, that was the frustrating thing about, you know, our season is that I felt that, God, it was there for the taking. You know, Baltimore looks like the odds-on favorite to go to the Super Bowl, and it would have been a challenge going up there to beat them, you know, once we put ourselves in that position. But, you know,
it would have been nice to try, though.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
maybe they learned something in the first game, you know.
Maybe.
Well, hopefully they did. We got whooped so bad. I mean, hopefully they learned a couple things. But, I mean, I agree. This was definitely, if there was a year, it was this year. But with how good Baltimore is playing on both sides of the ball, honestly, even if we were healthy, it would have been a tough win.
You know, everybody was really hard on Lamar Jackson when he came into the league. He couldn't throw, you know, and all this other nonsense. But the kid's turned around and made a pretty good career for himself.
Absolutely. And how about even this past offseason when all the teams came out and said nobody was interested in giving up two first-round picks to get him?
Yeah.
And I'm sure if you ask quite a few of those teams, maybe even including us at this point, you know, should we have done it? Maybe. But – I mean, that contract that he got to is, you know, you have to pay him $200 million after giving up two first-round picks. So it was steep, but at the same time, you know, especially talent like his, you know, we only see that once every 20 years.
Yeah.
How many elite quarterbacks are there in the league? I mean, you know, five, six?
Yeah. I mean, that's tough, Mike. You know, elite, you know, that's a big word.
Top shelf. Who are your top shelf quarterbacks?
Yeah, you got Mahomes. You know, I would say Burrow, when he's healthy, is definitely there. Prescott and guys like that.
I'd say Josh Allen and Lamar. Those four.
We got to be missing guys.
Well, we're not including Lawrence. We're not including some of the guys who may get there, but they aren't there yet.
No, Trevor Lawrence, I definitely wouldn't put in that category. Not at this point. He's very inconsistent. I mean, you know, it goes beyond that. You know, the quarterbacks, you know, the coach. It's one thing when you look at Baltimore and you look at San Francisco, the coaching's outstanding. The defenses are outstanding. And that really, really benefits your quarterback. It gives them more opportunities to make plays, you know, when the defense is getting the other team's offense off the field. You know, it works hand in hand, and that's why it's called a team.
You got to have good coaching. You've got to have a good front office staff who can pull in the right players, you know, to fit the schemes the coaches want to run.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, put a team together. And, you know, we're going through that down here, except maybe it's not turning out as well as we thought it might.
Yeah. You know, our moves, Mike, you know, I say it all the time. I mean, we have to start drafting Pro Bowl type players, you know, guys that are all pros, Pro Bowl type players. And we just don't get enough of them. You know, if you go back over the last 10 years and you look at, you know, the guys that we've drafted, I mean, how many of them are going to be Hall of Famers, number one? Number two, how many Pro Bowls do we get year in and year out? Now, this year we had five guys, you know, but they're all veteran players for the most part that have, you know, been on other football teams for years. You know, they're up there in age. Armstead, Mostert. Who else made it? Ramsey. These are guys that are veteran football players. Where are our young drafted players in regard to Pro Bowl, all pro type players? Tyreek Hill's another one that made it, another veteran guy that we had to trade for. They're not coming through the draft, and that's, you know, that's definitely a problem. You know, you'd like some sort of balance, wouldn't you? You know, to where you have these studs that you drafted.
Well, Tua made it. We drafted him.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, Mike.
That's all I got for you.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. Right. I got you. Uh-huh.
I think Wilkins got snubbed. Well, I think Wilkins should have been Pro Bowl. I think he's second or third team reserve or something like that. He'll end up there somehow, but...
The coaches will pull them in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there comes a point, guys, where, you know, you look at our team, and it's unfortunate, you know, that we're having injuries to guys like Jalen Phillips and the Javon Holland. But,
and you Chubb. Know, is the,
what's that, Mike?
And Chubb,
right. But I'm talking about guys that we drafted, these younger football players. You know, you're looking at them and you're saying, you know, where are our studs? Where are our Pro Bowl players? You know, accountability and being on the football field is part of that equation. And, you know, Holland now, next year, he's going into what, his fourth season?
Yeah.
You know, at some point, we want to see him take that next step. Even when he was on the field this year, guys, he had one interception, and that was on a Hail Mary, you know, which was a phenomenal play, don't get me wrong, against the Jets, but it's not the type of play that you're looking for.
If you listen to people around the league, he is highly thought of.
He is, and he grades out very, very well. But where are the big plays? I mean, X-Man, one thing about X-Man, and guys, we've seen it over the years, he's come up with a ton of big plays. You know, pick sixes, big interceptions at key times, great interceptions in the end zone when the other team was ready to score. You know, this is what you want out of Holland. And Jalen Phillips, same type of thing. When the game's on the line, you want to see a big strip sack, something to that effect.
You know, Lewis, we got the pleasure of watching Anderson and Scott, and we watched the Blues Brothers, right?
Right. Yeah, always making some, big plays.
We had some great safety tandems that were ball hawks, and we just haven't, you know, I mean, I guess maybe Jarvis Williams for a little while, but we just have not had a lot of that the past 20 years, you know?
No, and that's my point is that, you know, these guys are really solid football players, and we're looking at them, and we're like, man, they should be studs. You know, when are we going to see them take that next step? And then before you know it, they're 4 or 5 seasons into their career, and it's still not there. And now they're up for another contract. So at some point, we got to get guys that come out of the draft and just excel right out of the gate, become Pro Bowl players and become All-Pro players and possible Hall of Famers somewhere down the line. It's been a long time since we've drafted somebody like that.
That was a big ask, Lewis.
Mike, I mean, you look around the teams, the other football teams in the NFL, I know. And there's guys scattered all through rosters that are going to be Hall of Fame players and are perennial Pro Bowl players. We do not necessarily have that out of our young talent. We just haven't had it up to this point. You know, as good as Hunt is, same situation. I mean, you know, you're hoping that, you know, he gets to that point to where he's just the best guard or one of the best guards in the league. I mean, I think he's close, but, you know, he's another guy that got drafted in 2020. He's going to be in his fourth season next year. You know, they're all getting up there.
You know, you look at, I mean, obviously there are circumstances here, but you look at the last two drafts and A-Chain, you know, is about the only guy you can point to and say he can play.
Right.
We haven't seen anything yet out of Uzomah. We haven't seen anything yet out of Cam Smith or Channing Tindall, you know.
No.
Nope. Cameron Good, we haven't seen much from. He played a little bit at the end of the year, but. You know,
right.
nothing that stands out at you, you know, to say this guy's going to be great, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you have four draft picks, Mike, you're talking about over the – we've only had 8, by the way.
Yeah,
over
and I should throw Skylar Thompson in there too.
Yeah, we've had 8 draft picks over the last 2 years, and that's simply because we've made trades and just depleted our draft, right?
Right.
So you're banking on guys like Chubb. You know, you gave up a number one for him, and he had a great season. And Tyreek Hill, you gave up 5 draft picks for. So you're and you lost a draft pick because of the tampering situation.
Right.
So you had 8 draft picks. So you have to make them count, right? And as you mentioned, you know, as you look at Tindall and Eazy-E, you know, that was our 3rd and 4th round draft picks. You had to hit on those, especially the 3rd round with Tindall, and you didn't do it. And then this year you come back and you have a 2nd-round pick and Cam Smith doesn't see the field all year. It's a problem. It really is. I mean, this guy did not see the field with all the injuries, including X-Men at the end of the season.
They were signing people off the street.
Well, yeah, Eli Apple was starting over him. And, you know, you had Needham coming off of the serious injury. So, you know, it's frustrating because you look around the NFL – and, you know, Chris talks about this all the time. Look at this, man. This guy was their number 3 draft pick, and he's their starting middle linebacker, and he's blowing it up. And this happens way too often for other teams and not so much for us.
Agreed.
Well, I think we all agree. how do you change it? You know, how do you change it?
Well, you cut it off at the head, Mike. You cut it off right at the top.
There seems to be a reluctance to do that, though. All right, what we're going to do is we're going to take a step back for just a couple minutes, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Listen, I don't know what the situation is, Mike. I think that, you know, Ross and Greer are, you know, in bed together. And, you know, I don't mean that in any other way other than, you know, the expression. So, you know, they're hand in hand. And, you know, Greer knows basically all the tampering and all that stuff. I mean, Greer is right underneath Ross. He's his number one guy. So
he's his lieutenant.
He's his right. I mean, he basically knows what's going on in the organization. You know, the head coaches that we've been through, you know, McDaniel, hopefully, you know, he was a disappointment again at the end of this season, but hopefully he's going to be here for a while. I don't know. I mean, if he has another season like he did this season, who knows? So Greer hasn't made, you know, him and Ross haven't made right decisions in regards to head coaches up to this point. They've been mistakes. You know, and some of our early draft picks have been definitely a cause for the situation that we're in regard to not being able to win playoff games. So, I mean, it's got to start from the top, Mike. You know, you can't blame the players that are getting drafted. I mean, they are what they are. You know, we're just missing on way too many, you know, way too many shots here at it, you know, especially, you know, in 2020, you know, that draft is, you know, is going to hurt us for years to come, you know, because that should have been our rock solid players that we go, you know, that we just build around, right? And, you know, Noah's gone. Austin Jackson's an average at best tackle. And Tua, you know, has a lot of,
Raekwon,
you know,
Davis won't be back, I don't think.
I don't know about that, Mike. You know, Brandon Jones, I mean, you know, he's been a very, very solid player for us. He's made plays. I mean, I don't mind him. Robert Hunt's been good. You know, in the second round, they did well there. But, you know, the fourth and fifth rounds where we had those draft picks didn't hit on any of those. And again, you know, the first round just absolutely killed us because there was so many other options that we could have, so many other roads we could have went down and we didn't. And, you know, that draft is going to hurt us, like I said, for years to come. So what are we talking about?
It's interesting that you say that. Now,
go ahead.
What would you have done instead of what they did?
Well, if you go back to the 2020 draft, Mike, and you see, you know, who basically got drafted after Austin Jackson, you had a guy named Justin Jefferson there on the table that was picked like two or three picks later. If you draft him, there's no need to trade for Tyreek, right? I mean, you've got a younger guy there who's got just as dynamic. I mean, he isn't as good as Tyreek Hill, but he's right up there with him, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you go that route, you know, the quarterback situation with Tua, I mean, you could have went with Herbert right there, or you could have went with, you know, a tackle and Wirfs, you know, Tristan Wirfs. He's doing pretty well up in Tampa, right?
Yep,
definitely. He's
very, very solid pick to solidify your offensive line. There were different options there. You know, Ayuk was still there, you know, when we drafted. I mean, Austin Jackson was 110%, you know, of a reach at that point. He truly was. I mean, Chris, who else do you see after that first? Jordan Love was there. Even if you didn't want to go with Tua there or Justin Herbert, you could have came back and drafted Love, you know, very, very late in that draft as well. You know, you could have took him at 18. And would we be any better with Jordan Love than we are with Tua, guys? I mean, what are your thoughts on that, you know?
My thoughts on Jordan Love is he was definitely got drafted into a good situation because they drafted him, but they still had Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, they drafted
him. And Aaron Rodgers didn't like it, but, you know, he got to sit behind Aaron Rodgers for 3 years and kind of develop. Because right. Coming out of college, I remember they said that he had a lot of talent, but he wasn't quite ready yet to right. start. That right. was what the opinions of the analysts were at the time. So, I mean, as far as how I feel about that 2020 draft.
Now, we said the same thing about Tua that year.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
I mean,
he was starting anyway.
Herbert looks like he should have been that pick. instead of Tua at number 5. But then when you go into that second pick where we took Austin Jackson, a guy who went about 6 or 7 spots down was Cesar Ruiz, who's actually a really good center for the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
So we could have answered that right there with an offensive lineman.
Right.
And then when we took Igbinoghene, I mean, a couple picks later, T. Higgins, Michael Pittman Jr., Xavier McKinney, who's a really good safety for the Giants, Kyle Duggar, another really good safety for the Patriots. Yeah, but
they needed a tackle.
No, I know that, but I mean, it's, are you going to reach at that position, or are you going to take kind of the best guys available?
No, I think you'll have to address it. I'm not a big reach guy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, we definitely did need a tackle, but we could have drafted the center right there and then drafted, you know, I mean, there's so many different routes we could have took because of the talent that was on the board. And then we could have addressed the tackle situation in free agency like we did with Teron Armstead, but maybe a year earlier.
And you know, we talk about it, Chris, every draft, right? Do you want to take the best athlete available, or do you want to, you know, fill picks for need?
Yeah, and it's really mind-boggling because it's like we took Igbinoghene, and I just named, if you wanted to go the defensive route, Xavier McKinney, Kyle Duggar, Antoine Winfield Jr., who's developed into a really good safety in Tampa Bay. I know there's some Jalen Johnson. Oh my gosh, a guy who's about to hit free agency for Chicago. That's probably going to be one of the highest paid free agents who's really good. We didn't even bring up Trayvon Diggs. I mean, it's just really mind boggling, and it pisses me off more than anything when we have these high draft picks and we just as fans, and not even like, I'm not even somebody who watches a lot of college football, but after the season's over, I start paying attention and doing some research on these high draft picks or guys that they project to go in the first or second round. And if, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. The Igbinoghene over the Trayvon Diggs, I always bring this up, is like when we took Charles Harris over TJ Watt. It's like these guys are brothers of all pro guys who are going to go down, you know, as some of the best at their time. I mean, JJ Watt definitely more so than Stephon Diggs, but you get what I'm trying to say. It's like, even if these guys end up being half the players that their brothers were, you're still going to have a solid guy for years to come, you know? And it's just unfortunate because, like you guys just brought up, that 2020 draft really could have, it was either going to make us or break us, and I felt that way then, and I definitely feel that way now.
What you needed to be
the
catalyst.
Absolutely.
Well, here's my thought on that draft, right? You know, you had Flores here at the time, right? And the defense was pretty sound. I mean, you know, regardless of the fact that they were doing zero blitz, so on and so forth.
Unconventional scheme, but it worked.
But it worked, and they were playing at a very high level, okay? So you come into this draft and just think about this. You draft Justin Herbert, you get your quarterback, and then you come back with the 18th pick and you draft your receiver in Justin Jefferson. And then instead of Igbinoghene, you go out and you get your running back, whether it be DeAndre Swift, or Jonathan Taylor, who was still on the board. I mean, you got literally an offense there to match your defense, and you're like, holy Toledo, you know, we're loaded down. I mean, you drafted Robert Hunt, which was fine in the second round, right? You pick him up, but guys, it goes beyond Jonathan Taylor. I mean, you go down that, you know, Cole Kmet was drafted in the second round that year. Trevon Diggs, as Chris mentioned, Jalen Hurts was drafted thereafter.
Yeah.
DK Dobbins. I mean, there's so many. AJ Dillon was drafted after Raekwon Davis. Now, we talked about the absolute need for a running back, right? You know, a good young running back. I would have loved to have had a guy like AJ Dillon on our football team, getting him in that second round instead of maybe a Raekwon Davis. We knew we needed running backs. We kept bringing in just bums, you know, guys that from other teams signing free agents year in and year out. You know, you can go down the list. I don't have to name them all. We did it for 3 straight years, and not one of those guys panned out that we brought in. Chase Edmonds, you go back to a couple of the other guys prior to him. And you had all of this running back talent there for the taking, and we passed up on these guys on four different occasions.
There are certain positions they just don't prioritize, and I think that's one of them, as well as tight end.
Well, the tight end, Mike, they've made attempts. I mean, we've drafted Smythe, we drafted Gesicki, and then they drafted Hunter Long. They just drafted the wrong guys. I mean, Cole Kmet would be – he's a very good tight end in Chicago. He's very, very
great
solid.
Great two-way, too. He can block and he can catch.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, when you look at this as a whole and you said, you know what? Our offense flat out sucks. You know, you had Fitzpatrick coming back and he moved the team, but you knew the receiver position was just horrible. It was absolutely, the running back situation was not good either. You know, you had Fitzpatrick just balling, you know, airing out to guys that were average receivers. Parker had a really good year that year, but you needed offensive players and you had dynamic guys on the board all over the place on this. In this draft, and you literally missed at every single turn. Every single turn, you missed at them. So, that draft is definitely going to come back to haunt us. There's no question about it. I mean, when you look at the first round and the second round and the amount of talent that was there for the taking, I mean, wow. T. Higgins, like you mentioned, Chris, could you imagine him, you know, on our football team instead of Igbinoghene right now? I mean, you know, Forget it.
You know, it's a domino effect because had you taken Higgins, then you don't need Waddle.
Right? Yep, exactly.
Who you came back and took, you know, traded up to get in 21.
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, you know, this trickles down. You know, the same with drafting Justin Jefferson. You don't have to trade for Tyreek Hill.
Right.
I mean, you could have literally drafted Justin Jefferson and T. Higgins in this draft instead of the guys we drafted, which were Austin Jackson and Igbinoghene. Now, could you imagine those two guys lining up on the outside for you? I mean, it wouldn't be a bad situation,
It would have saved you a ton of draft picks.
Absolutely. I mean, they needed to attack on the offensive side. They had some solid defensive players. You know, they had just drafted, if I'm not mistaken, the year before, Christian Wilkins in the first round, and Van Ginkel was a solid fifth round pick in 2019. And you know, so you had some solid players. The year before that, you drafted Jerome Baker, who was your starting middle linebacker. So you had some solid players on the defensive side, and they were actually playing. You know, obviously X-Man was a Pro Bowler at that point. He was at the top of his game, so you had some really solid defensive.
You know what?
Players.
That 18 draft wasn't bad. You had Fitzpatrick, you had Gesicki, you had Baker, you had Smythe, and Jason Sanders.
The problem is we let Fitzpatrick, probably our best draft pick that we've had in so long, just walk. I mean, I get that his mom came out and was talking to the press and doing all this, that, and the third. But in my opinion, you can't let him walk. You can't.
No.
You cannot let him walk. And when I think, what did we only get? One first round? Or did we even get a first round for Minka?
I think so.
I think we might have gotten one. But, I mean, for a guy of his caliber and what he's become, I mean, we should have at least gotten two ones or one and two.
The Steelers got the better of that trade.
Yeah, for sure. Them as a franchise, they do it the right way. When you look at the Lions recently, what they've done this past 3 or 4 years, they've hit on so many draft picks, and now these guys are going to be part of their core for a long time coming. And I'll tell you what, with the 49ers possibly not having Deebo Samuel, they might be representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. And it's just crazy to see how big of a turnaround they've actually had in such a short amount of time.
It's not only the Lions, Chris. It's the Packers.
Yeah,
the,
I mean, you can look at a bunch of
the Texans.
Yep, it's exactly. Houston, it's Houston right. more exactly. so than anybody. I mean, they were trash for the last couple of years.
They're all just, you know, they're basically rebuilding, and they've been in the playoffs, and now they're right back in the playoffs and winning playoff games before we've even won one. And we were in the greatest position of any team that I know of in recent history. I mean, we really were. We had 2-3 years there where we were just going to have a ton of draft picks. through trades and whatnot. And look at the position
we're still in now. Even giving up the pick for tampering and all that, we still had five number one picks in those 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, that should have been, you know, your nucleus. And then, you know, you fill in with the third round picks and the fourth round picks that you have left.
Right. Exactly.
Like they did with Achan, you know, that was a great pick. But, you know, he's a small guy and there's reasons he was there in the third round.
Right. Yeah, he is dynamic. There's no question about it. I mean, he's one of our best draft picks. But, you know, the trading around and the this and that and all this other stuff, I mean, you know, I don't know what's going to happen going far. How many draft picks do we have this year? Do we have, you know, our
We're missing two mid-round picks. Aside from that, we have our full complement.
Yeah. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I mean, I mean, how about as recent as the 2023 draft, we were supposed to have two first round picks and we gave up one for Chubb and then the other one we got taken for tampering. I mean, those two picks were huge too. I mean, you know, that's another two opportunities to draft guys who are going to be cornerstone pieces for years to come, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the 2023 draft and the guys that were drafted this year, you know, guys like Gibbs, you know, the running back for Detroit. I mean, he's absolutely outstanding. You know, the kid in Seattle, the wide receiver, Zay Flowers in Baltimore, Jordan Addison in Minnesota.
Christian Gonzalez, who was a friggin' stud for the Patriots before he got hurt at the beginning. I mean, he absolutely was playing at a super high level.
Dalton Kincaid, the tight end for Buffalo, looks like a really, really solid football player. I mean, you know, there were guys there. Joey Porter Jr., the cornerback.
Sam Laporta, we already talked. I mean,
Porter. Yeah, I mean, you know, there were guys there.
Every team can go back through the draft and look at situations like this and say we should have picked this guy, we should have picked that guy.
Well, yeah, but we didn't even have the opportunities is where I was kind of getting at as far as the 2023. Like, we should have had two first-round picks, and instead we got Chubb, who we extended immediately after and it now tore his – ACL so late in the season. They said that they're expecting Chubb to be back around October. And it's like, man, it's
but
just,
you never know.
Yeah,
some guys heal faster than others.
Ramsey came back pretty doggone quick, you know. So I mean, it's not impossible. It just depends on their work ethic and, you know, how. And the same thing with Phillips. I mean, the great thing about you know, the show that they had, Hard Knocks, you know, was the fact that they kept showing you Phillips at the camp and working every single day to get back to where he needed to
get. Oh, he's a monster. He's a monster. You know, it's just a matter of whether his body cooperates.
Exactly. Yep. We got to hope that that's the case. But this franchise as a whole, you know, they're lacking the young talent, the Pro Bowl talent, as I've mentioned. And it's got to change. It's got to change. We got to get guys that are game changers, that are going to, in big games, make big plays. You look around the NFL, and you look at these playoff games, and you look at the guys that are stepping up and just blowing it up in the playoffs and doing a great job, whether it be on the defensive side or the offensive side. That's what we need. You know, we need guys to step up and make plays when we're playing good football teams.
All right, guys, we're going to break for a few moments, and we'll be right back.
Look at the competitive teams that we played against this year, right? Even the Dallas game. What did we really do in that game? I mean, Sanders is the guy that
we had five field goals.
We had five field goals. The defense had some key turnovers. Wilkins made a great play. Yep. Josh Allen made some horrible decisions. And granted, we did put pressure on him on those given, you know, on those interceptions. But, you know, we were somewhat fortunate. But where were the Tyreek Hills? Where were our Pro Bowl players in that game? You know, that was the turning point there. You know, that we gave up home field advantage in the playoffs. The Tennessee game, it's the same thing. Where was Tyreek Hill? Where was the offense in that football game?
That was a funny game.
It was a game, Mike, that should have been put away early, and we screwed around inside the red zone and didn't come away with touchdowns, and in the end, it bit us in the ass. But my point is that in these big games, you know, where you have to win, they're absolute necessities in December Yeah, none of our guys were there. None of them. None of them stepped up. None of our number one draft picks. None of, just a lot of them weren't there. A lot of guys were hurt for one reason or another. And, you know,
Lewis, on offense, you're playing with a makeshift offensive line.
Yeah. Well,
don't know how else to say it.
Yeah. I mean, Mike, but other than Connor Williams, that was our starting offensive line. You had four out of the five starters back.
Yeah, but they're not good. They're not, right. You know, they're at best an average offensive line.
And not only that, I mean, when guys are going in and out, like Hunt, for instance, Hunt came back, then got hurt, was out another three games. I mean, when guys are coming in and out, even if they are respectable starters, it still takes a game or two to get back into.
It's like
we were talking about last week. I mean, when you're listening to the Buffalo game and the announcer says that they've started every single offensive lineman.
Yep.
It's been the same
since week one.
Yeah, the same starting five since week one. I mean, obviously that takes luck too, but I mean, that's what you're looking for. And even if you have one or two guys go down, then that's fine. But I mean, Armstead missed a handful of games. I mean, like I said, guys were shuffling in and out all year, and I think it really affected the offense. I mean, as far as us being able to run the ball and pass the ball.
Well, are we a physical team or a finesse team?
Well, guys, listen, this goes, and, you know, this will go full circle over and over again, okay? You know, you have Eichenberg, right? He's a number two draft pick. So regardless of whether he's playing guard or center or tackle, whenever you've put him in, he hasn't played well at all at any of those positions. Now, I give him all the credit in the world for playing the center position and stepping in. And that's what their game plan was. I mean, we kept saying all through the preseason, who's our backup center if Connor Williams goes down? I remember Chris mentioning it over and over and over again. Who is our backup center if this guy goes down? It's Eichenberg. Well, he's a number two draft pick, okay? So look at him and then go back and you look at your Solomon Kinleys of the world and the Michael Dieter, who is another third-round draft pick who's starting elsewhere right now, right? He's a starting offensive lineman somewhere, but here he failed. Isaiah Prince is another one. We drafted these linemen, and it all goes full circle. We have veteran guys that we bring in as free agents. They get hurt, and the guys that we've drafted over the last 3, 4, 5 years are not coming in and being good football players for our football team, grading out well and getting the job done. And this happens on a consistent basis. You can look at every single position on this football field. You know, Jerome Baker going down. Tyndale not able to fill the need. Cam Smith with X-Man going down, not able to fill the need. And this happens way, way too often with this football team. And these drafts in the middle rounds, these guys have to be players that are going to be able to step in and make plays for you and you know, make you a successful football team instead of guys
Michael
that are riding
Dieter,
the bench.
Lewis is playing for the Houston Texans, and his PFF grade was 57.1.
Yeah, right. He came in to play center after their center went down.
Right, so similar sure situation as Eichenberg.
Yep.
I got one more for you guys, and then I'm not doing this anymore. So we took Eric Uzukama three picks later. The Green Bay Packers selected Romeo Doubs.
Yeah.
Who's been again a pretty solid receiver. So it's like, it's just, I know we can do this all day, but when it's happening as frequently as it is, then it becomes a problem.
Lewis, give us some history. How long has Greer been with the Dolphins, and what has been in his roles?
Well, he's been the GM since 2016. Okay, prior to that, he was the general manager from 2007 to 2015. He was the director of college scouting. So those 8 years, he was the director of college scouting.
So that's a pretty critical position as far as making out the draft board and doing those type of things.
Absolutely. I mean, you go back to some of those drafts, you know, back to 2007, Mike, and it's ugly.
Yeah. Wasn't Deion Jones, or what was that guy's name? The guy we traded up to, Deion Jordan, wasn't he the head of scouting the year we took him?
Yeah.
What year was that?
That was 2013.
Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, we traded to move up and get him, I believe. Then they took Jamar Taylor in the second round.
It was no better then than it is now.
Dallas Thomas at tackle in the third round. Another third round pick, Will Davis, defensive back. These guys just didn't last. Jelani Jenkins in the fourth round and Deion Sims in the fourth round actually lasted with the team a little bit longer than the guys drafted in front of them. You know, go back to 2012, you had Tannehill, Jonathan Martin, we all know his story, Olivia Vernon, who was a pretty solid football player. Then you had a guy named Michael Igbinu, who absolutely failed at tight end. Lamar Miller, who was a pretty solid running back for a fourth round pick. Yeah. And then Rashad Matthews in the seventh round, who actually went on to have a really good career. Man, oh man. I mean, my God, you look at 2014 and you drafted Juwan James, right? With your number one pick. Yeah. Then you had Jarvis, then a guy named Billy Turner, and then it all goes downhill from there.
Billy's still playing, isn't he?
Yeah, but he was terrible with the Jets this year, and I think he only was a part of that team because Rodgers brought him over, and the Jets' offensive line was so bad that even he had – but he got benched. I mean, he was pretty serviceable in Green Bay the last few years when Rodgers' last, I think, two years.
In 10 seasons, he's played 105 games. So,
yeah.
2017, which is basically the second year that he was the director of scouting.
No, GM. 2017.
The GM in 2017, which was his second year of drafting, he drafted Charles Harris, Raekwon McMillan, Cordray Tankersley, Isaac Asiata, Gotchow, Vincent Taylor, and Isaiah Ford. That was it. Now, Isaiah Ford made some plays for us here and there, but my God, that's an absolutely pathetic draft. As a whole, I mean, just really, really bad. First, second, third round, fourth, and fifth round picks, absolutely horrible. There wasn't really one guy worth the damn out of that group. Raekwon McMillan played a little bit for us, but then, you know, we let him go as a number two. I mean, it got 2017. That guy should still be playing for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would have hoped.
That was not a very good draft, by no means. So, you know, When you look at us as a whole and you see, you know, the issues in regard to depth and the fact that, you know, guys got pulled out of their living rooms where they were sitting in their underwear and were playing, you know, a playoff game in Kansas City against Mahomes and the Chiefs, it says a lot about your draft picks and where they are and what you think of them. Guys like Tyndale and Cam Smith had every opportunity to get in the games this year with all the injuries that we had, the players that play in front of them, and they did not see the field at all. They made no impact whatsoever. So, you know, it's a frustration. Chris, you mentioned Eric Eze, right? You know, same situation.
We still don't even know what happened with him this year. I mean, I know it was something that happened outside of the facilities. So, but I mean, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
listen, these are young guys and shit's going to happen with some of them. But bottom line is when you go back through this GM's career and you look at how we've done as a franchise while he has essentially been in charge, you really have to question, you know, why is he still there?
Right. Absolutely.
And, you know, I get, you know, he made some nice trades, but, you know, there's a cost to those trades. Number one, you're paying high salaries right away, whether you renegotiate the contract or not. And secondly, you're giving up, you know, resources, your draft picks.
Exactly. So, and future, you know, salary cap hits. I mean, this roster was built to win this season or last season. And now we're kind of in that position where I think I read something that we're going to have to free up close to $100 million.
Yeah, 90-something million.
Yeah, just to get back to square one, you know? Yeah. And it's like we have 22 pending free agents.
People may wonder how that number got so high, but you have to throw in paying the draft picks and all the other things that they have to do with money.
Yeah.
So once you do that, you realize that that's how much they actually need to get back to square one.
Yep. Right. And I'm going to tell you something else that's going to be a big
Chris,
factor.
Let's take a quick break here and just keep that thought.
So something to me that's going to be a huge factor into our near future is this situation with Tua. I personally, as much as I love the guy, I'd love to see him just play out his fifth year option, see if he can stay healthy again, improve, and win at least one or two playoff games. And if he's going to be the answer, then you give him the deal. But what I don't want is for them to extend him to a three-year extension, and then we're somewhat stuck with him for the next 2 years. And I mean, we saw the situation in New York this past offseason, I think, really messed up the whole quarterback market, because when they gave Daniel Jones all that money, now Tua's going to look at Chris Greer like, they gave him this. You guys aren't going to give me at least this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just so. And if we end up giving Tua that big extension, it might help us in regards to this season. But within the next two seasons, when his cap jumps up to about $40 million a year, which is around what average quarterbacks are getting now, it's going to be even harder. So,
yeah.
I mean, I really hope they think long and hard about extending Tua and what they see in the future. Because what I would like to see personally is, like I said, you let Tua play out that fifth year. And if next season goes the way this season did and the season prior, I think we may see Greer, Tua, and McDaniel all gone, and they just completely clean house. So, I mean, it's just going to be really interesting to see.
Well, that's the approach what's going to happen, take. Chris. I mean, Tua is going to be back. McDaniel's going to be back, and Greer is going to be there. You know, they're going to give this thing one more shot. But as you look at the roster and you see how many players are going to have to be replaced, I mean, there's a lot of veteran guys on this team. I mean, you go down the list, you got Eli Apple, Armstead, Jake Bailey, Braxton Berrios, Justin Bethel, Robbie Chosen, and Chase Claypool. I mean, these are the guys that we're picking up over the course of the year, because we don't have one decent young receiver that we can basically look at and say, hey, you know what? This guy can come in. We drafted him in the third or fourth round. He made plays. I mean, you go on and on down this list, and there's guys that have been in the league now four, five, six years. And, I mean, they all cost money. I mean, they're veterans, right? I mean, how many of these guys can you really afford to keep, and who are you replacing them with is the question.
There's a lot of starters that are pending free agents this year, and that's kind of the scary thing, too.
I didn't even get into that.
Let me just give you a quick thought, okay?
Go ahead.
You've got Ogba and Chubb who are – I'm sorry. You got Phillips and Chubb who are both hurt, and then you've got Ogba who you've got to re-sign if you're going to keep him, right? And they can't afford to do that.
No.
Well, we would have to restructure because he's under contract. But I read actually today,
$17.7 million cap charge.
Yep. And if we were to release him, we'd free up $13.5 million. So I think he's as sure as gone. Even though we don't
that's my point.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have a backup for him yet, but I don't think that he's back with us unless he takes a major pay cut.
Now, whether or not he's a fit in Fangio's defense is a whole nother conversation, but
they could bring Justin Houston back, guys.
They could.
And Bruce Irvin.
Yeah.
The 36-year-old. And
Deshaun Hand, who actually was a solid role player, he's a free agent this year, too. So it's like, man, you guys, we already said it, but there's so many guys that we have to replace that it's just – I mean, guys, even if we wanted to just re-sign half of the guys that are free agents for us this year, that's going to be pretty much it. Like, well, I don't even.
How do you fiscally give Christian Wilkins a $100 million contract? How do you do that?
You have to do it like the Shohei Ohtani contract where what is it that we defer it until 2030 and then we'll give them 10 million a year.
I don't know if you get, guys, just real quick, you know, in that Kansas City game, you had Bruce Irvin, 36 years old, Justin Houston, 35 years old, and Melvin Ingram, 34 years old.
Wonder why we lost.
And people were complaining about the defense. Yeah. I mean, my goodness. I mean, how can you complain about the defense? You know, they did as much as they possibly could. But, yeah, I mean, Mike, they're going to have to – who are they franchising, guys? That's the thing. I mean, it's got to be Wilkins.
Well, if you're going to franchise anybody, it's going to be Wilkins, yeah. Right?
It's got to be Wilkins. So
or possibly Hunt if you decide you're letting Wilkins go.
I think you can sign Hunt for a lot less money and get him under contract, you know, multiple-year contract as compared to what you have to do with Wilkins. I mean, you have to bring him back for one more season. And if you feel that the season's not going to go well, Mike, you know what? Trade deadline. You know, maybe he's a casualty at the trade deadline. And, you know, we pull something like Denver did with us with Chubb, to where we get a first rounder back for him. You don't know. You got to see where the season is at that point next year. But I think Wilkins is almost guaranteed to be here next year. And I'm almost certain that Hunt will be. But past those two guys,
Van Ginkle, you almost got to have back because of the situation I explained a few minutes ago.
Absolutely.
But, and I totally understand that, Mike, but I don't know if there's a guarantee in that happening. I just don't know. I mean, I definitely feel the same way you do, but I think that they're going to look at Wilkins and Hunt as key guys across the offensive and defensive lines. And you got Sealer, who's already making a nice chunk of change at the other tackle position. You know, so, and they've also got to make a decision on Connor Williams, right? So, I mean, man, it's really going to be interesting to see how they, you know, how they tackle this, like Chris said, because there's just so many guys and so many decisions to make, and there's only so much money to do it with.
You're going to lose Howard. Who's going to replace him? Cam Smith?
Well, Kahoo is going to have to be the guy. It's going to have to be Kahoo. Cam Smith, I mean, we haven't seen anything out of him, Mike, to say that, you know. Yeah,
I understand that.
You know.
That was kind of my point.
You could possibly restructure X-Man's contract again if he wants to stay here.
He's having trouble staying healthy.
Yeah. I don't. And he said it on his – on the last press conference they did with him, they asked
thinking nothing about a discount.
Yeah, they said they asked him if he'd be willing to take a pay cut, and then he looked at the reporter and asked him, "Would you be willing to take a pay cut if your boss came to you?" And you know, and yeah. So it's
yeah. But, I mean, he's 30 years old, right?
Yeah, I think he's as sure as gone too.
Yeah, I think he's a casualty, and they're just going to have to make do with what they have, Mike. Maybe they bring in, you know, somebody, but I almost think that
he's got to. Well, how are you going to stop Mahomes and Josh Allen without cornerbacks?
Mike, you have to, at some point, you know, okay, so you go into this draft understanding where you are as a football team, right?
Yeah.
If you franchise Wilkins, you're okay across the defensive line because you do have Chubb. And you do have Phillips coming back at some point, and you got Sealer on the contract, so you're kind of solid there, right? If you do in fact,
it's hard to say they're solid when you got two guys coming off serious injuries.
Yeah, and that they both potentially are going to miss the first half of the season.
Yes, you know? Exactly, you know? Right. But you know, so even more importantly, you have to franchise him. You have to have Wilkins on your football team. You can't have three holes. Yeah. You know, across that defensive line right out of the gate. So, you know who you're going to keep and who you're not going to keep, right? If you don't keep X-Man, you have to go out and you have to draft a cornerback if Cam Smith's not the answer. You have to go out and get a high draft pick
that can
play the cornerback position.
That would be a major mistake,
well,
in my opinion.
Again, across the offensive line, the same thing. If you're not going to re-sign Connor Williams, then you have to take first, second-round picks across that offensive line.
That is a route that I would much rather them take than draft another corner top two rounds. I don't want to see that. I mean, we have so many different holes that – I mean,
but that is a Chris. That's a hole that, if you look at drafts, Cornerbacks are an absolute necessity. The Dolphins have made so many picks at that. We're like, how many corners do we need? Well, guess what? You know, in today's NFL, when you have 3-4 receiver sets, you have to have two solid corners. So I honestly, I wouldn't. Yep. I feel that that's one of the biggest positions that they draft at now, you know, that they look at.
Yep. Rush and cover.
Yeah. My thing is, though, if there's
a. Hold on one sec, Chris.
Yeah.
We're talking about cornerback, but we also need to bring up safeties because Elliott and Brandon Jones are going to be free agents.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, so I'd see us draft a safety. I mean, my thing is if there's a Joey Porter Jr. that slides to the second round or there's a guy like that, then go ahead and get him. But you know what I'm tired of as far as how we draft? I'm tired of us taking the fourth best tackle on the board in the first round like we did with Austin Jackson. Like, just because it's a need, I don't necessarily think that you'd have to take – you don't have to take him there if you're taking the fourth or fifth best guy in the draft. You know, it's like take the best guy available at a position that you need.
But you see, we're falling into that trap because we're saying, you know, they need a cornerback, so they better draft a cornerback. You know, we're doing exactly what we're saying they shouldn't do, and that's drafting for need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can only listen. You can only do so much, right? With the amount of draft picks that you're going to have. I mean, you look around this roster. I mean, is Jeff Wilson and Cedric Wilson part of this football team next year, right? Either one of them. Is Mike White part of this football team next year? Is he a necessity? I mean, what did we sign him to? What kind of contract?
I think it was a 1 year or maybe – no, I think it was a 2-year deal. Yeah, I think we can get out.
Yeah, they can if they want to. I don't know how they feel about him.
He's a huge upgrade over Skylar Thompson.
I don't think so either. And that was my thought process, is the fact that is he a necessity on this football team? I mean, you look up and down this roster and they're going to have to cut corners in so many different ways to have any kind of money to do anything. And a lot of these guys are going to be casualties. You know, a lot of these guys that I'm mentioning, you know, is Mostert on the contract next year?
Yes. I believe he's a free agent in 2025.
Okay. So is Jeff Wilson on the contract next year?
Yes, he is also a free agent in 2025 from what I've...
And Cedric Wilson the same?
No, Cedric Wilson is a free agent this year, I'm pretty sure. This year,
he's done.
Or it says void. So I'm not sure what that means as a type of free agent.
I thought Elliott had signed a 2-year contract when he came here. So he signed a 1-year contract to Sean Elliott?
Wow. Yep. He's an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah. So you got a hole there.
Need him as well. I mean, we're just talking about corners. Need him. Eli Apple, which I hope I never see him in a Dolphins uniform again. Elijah Campbell, who is, you know, he's a solid role player. He's a restricted free agent. So I'm not sure. What's the difference between that, Mike, the unrestricted and the restricted free agent?
They can basically tender the restricted free agent, and if they want to keep him, they can keep him pretty much.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Robert Jones. He's a restricted free agent, not unrestricted, so that might, you know, help us out a little bit.
Yeah, they won't lose him, but do they want to keep him? That's the question.
Yeah.
I mean, he played for hardly no money. I mean, $818,000.
Yeah.
So he's not somebody who's going to make a difference as far as salary is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this team as a whole, guys, right? And you look across the board. And this is what everybody as a Dolphin fan really has to look at. You look across the board and you're like, okay, going forward, guys, who do we feel really good about, right, going forward that we're going to have over the next 3 or 4 years before we have to worry about contracts, right?
Chubb.
Even the next 2-3 years. you got Phillips. A-chan. You got A-chan, right?
Yep.
You know, but I'm talking about as far as young guys go. I mean, this is a veteran roster, and you sprinkle in guys that are under contract that are banged up. I guess
you
got
to throw Waddle into that group, right?
Yeah, yeah. You have
to Waddle's 2025. So next offseason, we're going to be in this same exact position with Waddle, Jalen Phillips, with Javon Holland. We're going to have to make a decision on Eichenberg. I'm looking at next year's already, and it's just like, Jesus, David Long. Well,
this is the problem with trading away all these draft picks. You don't have the resources to, you know, you become a very top-heavy team, which is what's happened to us.
Yep.
And the problem becomes when you do that, Mike, is that the guys that you do hit on in the draft, when they need to get paid, all of a sudden you're like, damn, no, we got all this money out.
Because you're pushing these guys forward, you know, you're pushing the salaries forward.
How are we going to pay these guys that deserve to get paid and that we want to keep as Miami Dolphins? I mean, Wilkins and Hunt, to me, are guys that on both sides of the line of scrimmage have to be here going forward. They have to be.
There is some good news here, Lewis, though. And the good news is Jake Bailey's a free agent.
I was just about to say that. We need a damn punter. We need a serious punter. Jesus.
On top of all of the holes that we have, I mean, a punter is the last thing in the world. If you don't think that McDaniel and this organization values the tight end or the running back, what makes you think with his ego, McDaniel, that he even cares about having a punter on his football team because he feels that his offense can go up and down the field? We don't need a punter. We're not even gonna sign a punter this year because we're never gonna punt. We're just gonna go every fourth down. Mm-hmm. A punter is like, you know, they can get somebody off the scrap heap and not pay him damn anything, as far as I'm concerned, with the job that guy
did. Your boy Craig Kraft's a free agent.
Yeah, Craig Kraft, I mean, Berrios. But how much money is he making? You know, Berrios is a free agent as well?
Yes, sir.
He only signed a one-year contract to come.
Yep.
See, he's from Miami.
Claypool's a free agent to fill out the receivers.
Claypool chosen. None of those guys will be back.
Cedric Wilson, you know.
This is the problem, guys. You look at our receiving core, and you're like,
you got two guys.
Holy cow, what are we going to do? Yeah. We have to go out and get a few players just to field, you know, 3-4 receiver sets because everybody's gone. Everybody. I mean, everybody other than your two top guys are free agents, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every one of
essentially,
them.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, you're in but that position.
That's how they want to roll. That's you know.
I mean, I'm assuming this Julian Hill is going to be the backup to Smite, so they're probably not going to even think about a tight end.
I agree with you.
They're not even going to consider that situation. Yep. So, you know, your offensive line, you got a lot of guys.
Tyler Kroft is a free agent, so I'll have to pull somebody else in, but, you know.
Yeah. Tyler Kroft, I mean, you know, he wasn't really a big. Yeah. What's interesting about this, guys, is that, you know, our offensive line situation, it's like one extreme or the other, right? You got Kendall Lamb, who's 31 years old. I mean, he's 31.
He ain't coming back. Yeah, he ain't coming back.
I don't see him coming back.
He already said that he's not playing on the minimum next year. So
right, and he's going to wind up going somewhere because he's done a decent job and getting a nice.
He may get a starting job.
Yeah, exactly. Because offensive lines. I mean, Armstead's 32 years old. Okay, so you've got guys that are up there in age across that offensive line, but then, you know, you have guys. Like, what's his name? The Robert Hunt, who's 27 now. And then you've got Austin Jackson, who's still, believe it or not, only 24 years old. Can you believe that,
guys? He was 21 when he was drafted.
Yeah, 24 years old. So there's still the possibility that he can turn his career around a little bit. And Robert Jones is another guy who's only 24 years old. I mean, we think of him as, God, hasn't he been around forever? He's only 24 years old, Robert Jones. So he's a guy that – is he a free agent as well or is he still – he is. Yeah. Yep. They're going to have to re-sign a few of these guys or else they're not going to have a team to field.
But, right.
They're not going to have a team to field.
And therein lies the problem, gentlemen. They have to field a team.
Yep. They have to field a team.
It's going to be really interesting to see how they go about doing that because, you know, like we said, they're $90 million behind before they start.
They're going to have to restructure, Mike, a lot of these contracts. They're going to have to, you know. And hopefully these guys are willing to do it.
Don't you kind of feel like you're bailing water out of the Titanic?
Well, Mike, what are the options, in all honesty? I mean, what are the options? There's not an awful lot.
I think the obvious option is you clean house, but that's just
me. That was my initial after. I mean, I definitely was in my emotions a little bit after we lost the playoff game.
You're putting off the inevitable.
But yeah, do you guys honestly, I mean, seriously, honestly feel that's what they're going to do? They're going to clean
house. Absolutely not.
No.
Greer's going to try to save his butt. Sure.
Absolutely. I mean,
the positive is that he is good at doing these restructures and all this other stuff. So, I mean, got to see how it plays out.
Let's be real here a second, okay? The only reason he's good at that is because he's giving away money.
That's it. That's what I say all the time. True. I've argued with guys on the Facebook page, Mike, in regard to that. It's like,
I mean, you're going to give me $100 million now instead of later. Okay, sign me up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's easy to go out and get guys to come here. I mean, there's no state tax, right?
Right.
You come to Florida. I mean, there's benefits to playing for the Miami Dolphins financially. Okay, so. I mean, don't talk to me about the fact that, he signed some really good free agents, so on and so forth. Yeah, fantastic. But, I mean, look at the position we're in otherwise. And let me tell you something.
And
you
we know, were talking about restructuring, Lewis.
Mike, restructuring, if you look around the league, and I know Chris said it, you know, that he's really good at it. There's a ton of GMs around the league that do it year in and year out. You know, they restructure contracts over and over and over again. Yeah. And that's why they're successful year in and year out. We haven't won a playoff game in 23 years. You know, so he can, whatever he does good, it's minimal at best. I mean, he's done a horrible job. He's done it for years. He definitely has to be accountable for the situation.
It's funny you mentioned that because Dave Hyde wrote an article and, basically, he put it like this, okay? He says, what counts as accountability except for Dolphins GM Chris Greer? After 5 years of rebuilding and no playoff wins, Dolphins GM simply tries again in year six.
Yeah. That's pretty accurate,
and
right?
That sums up the article. I mean, I could read you a whole bunch of stuff, but there's no need. We covered it, so.
What I don't understand is that, you know, this guy gets credit for what, in all honesty? When you look around the league and you look around at these teams that have rebuilded so quickly, I mean, Green Bay literally had nothing but rookie receivers and tight ends this year that they went with. I mean, and they excelled when it was all said and done. And I like your cleaning house situation, Mike, but do we have faith in guys that he's going to bring in through the draft?
No. He's going out with them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If we were to do that, we have to completely just.
Oh, so you meant the whole kip and caboodle, not so much the players.
I mean, they can talk if they want to keep McDaniel or not, but I think there's enough reasons to lean against that as there is to lean for that.
Especially with how many good head coaching candidates there are this year. I mean, this year there's a lot of good coaches on the market, and I mean, I love McDaniel. I think he can definitely develop into best offensive coaches in the league. But it's just, I mean, how long is he going to tie himself to Tua? And how much is Ross and company going to allow him to
grow?
You know, exactly. Yeah. I mean, because right now he's kind of tied to Tua. He's kind of said that that's his guy. And I feel like he's going to sink or swim with him.
I think that was a condition of employment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion on McDaniel is this, is that there's a thin line that I feel that he's kind of swayed more in the too lackadaisical, too easygoing. There comes a point where you have to put your foot down and say, hey, guys, look, you know, you guys played like shit. You guys are not playing at a high level. Our big players have to step up and make plays. You guys were an embarrassment, and that's the bottom line, and that's the cold, hard facts. He's just, in my opinion, he's just too easygoing. I mean, you have to have a thin line. The guy up in Pittsburgh does a great job. He's a player's coach, but, man, he doesn't screw around. It's like, hey, guys, you know, we're on the field to win a football game, And you go, you see Pittsburgh.
No, he can look at you and make you cry.
Tomlin, year in and year out. Those guys want to play for him. You see the physicality that they're, you know, that they bring to the table on both sides of the football. You're never going to go in and you're never going to push Pittsburgh around for too long. You know, they turn it around pretty quickly. And a lot needs to be said of that. You know, with McDaniel, I think he's too passive. He's way too passive. The guys are too easy going. And I think at the end of the season, you know, it showed that. Those guys weren't ready to play football games, especially on the offensive side where he's basically responsible for that unit. And he needed to get in their asses and have them more efficient than they were. They were not playing at a very high level, period.
Well, you know, they were, I think the number is, I may be a game off here or there, but I think the number is 3-13 the last 2 years against winning teams.
Yeah. I mean, that's listen, guys, that's not going to cut it. And I mean, you know, Tua gets a lot of the blame and he should get some of the blame, but a lot of the blame I feel falls more so on McDaniel and the offensive side in regard to their game planning and so on and so forth. And you know what, guys, we can even go as far back. You can talk about Greer. Let's circle back to him and the fact that they didn't draft a guy like Tunsil. They felt it was more important to get a little wide receiver instead of a big right tackle to protect him for years to come.
You mean that Sewell?
Sewell. What did I say?
Tunsil.
Yeah, I meant Sewell. You know, that whole philosophy there just goes to show you that their mentality is just all backwards. I mean, a guy like a Waddle they come a dime a dozen. I mean, I hate to say it, but they do. I mean, there's guys coming out of the draft every year that are comparable to him.
And, well, they may come a dime a dozen, but do you trust this GM to find that dime? You know, I just don't know.
And well, I mean, I agree with what you said 1,000% because I've been saying it since the moment that we drafted Tua. It's like, okay, we drafted a guy who's coming off a major hip injury. Mm-hmm. What do? You beef up that offensive line. You get a really good running back to take some of that pressure off, and you're not putting him in a position off the rip where he has to put on the cape and be Superman. And, you know, that we really – I have never seen a team fail as much as we did at surrounding a top five pick within his first couple years.
Yep.
You know, I mean, once we got Waddle, it was cool. You know, he had his safety route. I mean, Waddle was running a bunch of 10-yard routes, set the season record for catches for a rookie. But, I mean, even that season, you know, we didn't
win your football games.
No, really. Exactly. Yeah. And not only that, it's like that wasn't the recipe for our offense becoming a top-tier offense. Our offense became a top-tier offense when we traded for Tyreek Hill. We signed Teron Armstead. We finally got an offensive coach who knew what they were doing, you know, because, I mean, we had Chan Gailey, the co-offensive coordinator. I mean, it was just a terrible situation all around. And a lot of that falls
Chan
on Greer.
Chan Gailey is a long story. You can't sum that up and say just saying he was bad because there were reasons why he was bad.
Yeah, and it's not even that he was bad because he's, you know, one of the greats as far as what I've read and what I've
heard. His hands were tied here.
Yeah, and he just, to me, he just wasn't the guy that I would bring in to, you know, help mold a young quarterback, you know? I would have preferred a guy like McDaniel off the rip that is kind of evolving with the game and kind of knows what it takes to move the football in today's game, you know?
When you look at the decisions, yeah, absolutely, Chris. When you look at the decisions that this organization has made, and it came from the top, there's no question about that.
Of course.
You know, rushing Tua into the starting lineup the year Fitzpatrick was quarterbacking, big mistake. It set Tua back a bit, as far as I'm concerned. He wasn't ready.
Coming off of that injury, he never should have been.
But, Mike, mentally,
there.
He wasn't.
Yeah,
he
mentally
admitted
or physically.
He didn't even know the playbook. Yep. So it's not only the physical aspect of it, it's the mental aspect of him being thrown into that situation. That came from up top. We know that Flores did not want anything to do with Tua that first year, and maybe even the second year. So that you look at the top of this organization, and that's where it starts. You got to cut it off at the head, and that's the biggest problem right there. You have to get somebody in there that that puts a scouting team in that says, man, you know what? You got this guy, you got that guy. You look around the NFL and there's guys that are getting drafted in later rounds that are just becoming Pro Bowl players. We can't even hit on our first rounders, you know? So it's a definite problem. And that's the issue, and that's why our team is where they are every year.
All right, guys. I think we have covered it.
Yep. We did?
I think so.
I've got another hour in me, Mike.
I'm sure you do.
All right.
I have no doubt about it. So,
all right.
You know, we can talk about Greer till the cows come home, but the bottom line is, you know, it's not just Greer. There's other problems in this organization, starting with the owner, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, it is what it is. You know, hopefully they step in something and get it back in line. But I don't see how. I just don't see how with the amount of money that they have to lay out. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, the fact, Mike, that we've spent an hour talking about the negative aspects of the team and had a hard time finding a lot of positive says a lot, you know, and it's the reality of it. I mean, you know, you can look at, you know, people can sit there and they can look at this team and say, well, damn, I mean, we had a nice solid record this year. And, you know, we were competitive all season and we were the number one offense.
You have to understand something, you know, and Chris knows this as well as anybody. There's a lot of young people out there that have not seen a winning Dolphins team.
Right. Yep. I'm one of them.
So they so, are happy.
It, right. As soon as they start doing halfway decent, they're excited. And I don't blame them. Yeah. I don't blame them at all.
No, we all get excited about it, but we're realistic. You know, when you look at the team as a whole, you know, we're kind of like, man, we got a lot of problems right now, more problems than we do solutions. To everything. Yeah. And that's an issue going into the season and going forward. So, you know, how they handle it is going to be quite interesting, and hopefully they handle it in a good way.
Now, if they come out this year and they have another winning season and they win a couple of playoff games, then I'll eat my words.
Absolutely.
Right, right.
So we'll see what happens.
Yep.
There's a lot, guys,
that has to happen in between now and then.
Yep. All right, guys. Thanks for joining me this evening, and thanks for listening, everybody. We know it was probably a long one for you, but hopefully you enjoyed it.
Yeah, they got no Dolphin football to watch, so they got plenty of time to listen to our crap, Mike.
Uh-huh. All right, everybody. Fins up.
Fins up, everybody.
Fins up, Dolphins.
All right, Fin fans, that's today's show. I want to thank the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network and the Sports Social podcast network. Check out these sites, guys. They've got articles and podcasts, which I think you'll enjoy. All right, until next week, be well and take care.
Podcast Network.